All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Let's do it. Thank you for joining us on The Change Artist, where we bring our listeners stories and great advice for leading and following through change from business leaders who are making a difference in their organizations. I'm your host, Alyssa Cox, and here on The Change Artist, our motto is, if change is the only constant in life, then let's do it better. And this season, we're focusing specifically on social change and how we apply the lessons of organizational change management to drive outcomes in the social sphere. So let's jump right in. Stephanie, how do you define social change?
Well, I think social change has to be community change. Social change is something that we do together to improve life for others, for ourselves and for others. That's how I would define it.
This doing it together, we're going to dig into that a little
bit. Yeah, yeah.
But first, I want to introduce you. So for those of you who don't know her, Stephanie Olson is a speaker, an author, and the chief executive officer of the Set Me Free Project, a prevention education organization on human trafficking, social media safety, and healthy relationships. And today we're here to talk about, among other things, the importance of education in driving social change. So I want to dig into this idea that social change is something that we do together and that it's about community change. How does that differ from other change efforts? Is all change necessarily community change? It's just a question of which community we're talking about.
So let me backtrack a little bit, because I think first change begins with us. So yourself, the first thing to change is yourself. And I think that when I think about the work that I do in the area of human trafficking and sexual and domestic violence, I had to get my head out of the sand that, you know, this is actually happening and this is something that is going on in my community. So that was the first change. Then once that change happens, that's when that education begins. That's when the community conversation begins. And that's how that change moves. So I would say that change does begin in community. Now that community can look different, but I think it starts with us.
I like when you talk about, right, the change that you went through as you got involved in the work that you're in. And it was not a question of changing. You didn't go from being a sex trafficker to having an epiphany and now you're anti-sex trafficking, right?
Right.
It was a change that required self-education. Is that the kind of change, that sort of the kind of change in us or starting in us that you see broadly? Or are there other sort of elements of changing the self to be ready to change those around us?
So I will say I actually know some former traffickers who have changed that dramatically. So that change can happen as well. But I think the change is, it is definitely much more subtle, but I have seen people resist it. I have seen people who say, I heard somebody say, literally, I don't want to hear that because I don't want to know that happens. Now, that is a very dangerous mentality, because then we're just pretending things don't happen if they actually do. It's almost just a change of knowledge. It's not that we think one thing and now we're going to think something else. It's ignorance and coming out of that ignorance. That's what it is.
So we've had conversations with folks on this podcast where we've talked about resistance to change and actually changing the narrative of resistance and the vocabulary to rejection. The change that we were talking about here was changing behavior, changing process, changing technology. And the solve was around figuring out how to communicate better the value of change, right? And overcoming rejection of your message.
Yeah.
In the case of resistance to knowledge, how do we approach people who are resisting rejecting because they've intentionally said, or unintentionally, that I don't want to know?
I think we have to turn the mindset from fear to empowerment. The reason that people are resisting knowledge is fear-based. And I think a lot of the conversation around social justice themes can come from a place of fear-based conversation or anger-based conversation. And I think to truly educate, we have to get away from those two things and bring in the flavor of empowerment as opposed to fear or anger.
I love that because I mean, we've had so many conversations around equity, equality, and inclusion, particularly over the last several years. And where I see resistance to those conversations, what I perceive is, by and large, the resistance is on the part of white people who are afraid mm-hmm. that this conversation is actually going to disenfranchise them. The mm-hmm. other narrative that I hear is white people who don't want to have the conversation because they don't know what they can do about it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think that when people are resistant, it really does come from a place, again, that's ignorance, right? And when I say ignorance, I don't mean you're stupid. I mean, we just don't know. And that's where that education comes from. And so you do have to be open to learn. You have to be open to be uncomfortable. That is a real thing. But I have seen so many conversations back and forth in these spaces where there is just anger this way, anger that way, and it really impedes the listening process.
If the key is changing by learning and turning that learning then into empowerment and leveraging that learning to empower, how do we break out of what I perceive to be pretty high walls to new ideas? So much of my media exposure is self-selected, and I happen to select the stuff that I know.
Right.
When I do run into something I've never seen before or that opens my eyes to social issues in a new way, I'm startled and surprised. I'm like, how do we systematize opening the aperture on social issues that fall outside of our normal media consumption?
That is a fantastic question. And you start actually working into the data language there, because the reality of what we're consuming is consumption based on our tastes. And so as we understand data and as we understand what starts to happen in the algorithm, we've all had that situation happen. I'm looking for new furniture. I want a couch. And then all of a sudden, I'm seeing couches everywhere on my ads. The same thing happens with the material that we consume. So if I am consuming some political party, for example, that's what's going to start popping up in my algorithm. And so we have to intentionally seek out new knowledge. And I really believe that it is critically important. And the way to truly learn and debate is seeing both sides of any topic. And so in order to do that, you have to be very intentional about seeking that out. And that's how we really learn.
And this idea of intentional curiosity, mm-hmm. it's a real hook for me, right? I love
it. Yeah.
My fear is, if I'm trying to be intentionally curious, how do I break out of the things that I already know, right? Like, there are podcasts that I've listened to and guests mm-hmm. that I've had on the show. And in meeting them, they've opened my eyes to new questions.
Right.
Questions it never occurred to me to ask. I mean, and I would love to have like a curated experience of questions I haven't answered. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But most of my curated experiences are things people know I already like.
Right.
So how do we curate a list or go out and find the questions that we didn't even know we should be asking?
That's a fantastic question, because you don't know what you don't know. But I really do think that in order to start asking some of those questions, in order to start really learning things that are out of our realm of thought, is listening. I really believe that. I think there is so much we can learn just from listening to people around us. And that could be in one-on-one conversations. I think so often somebody says something that may Now, somebody may say something that triggers something that is like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic. I want to know more. Well, that's easy, right? But what if somebody triggers something that you say, I am so opposed to that idea of thinking, boom, I just shut it out. And if we can learn to open our mind just a little bit to hear that opposing viewpoint, not necessarily agree, not necessarily, but just hear it, I think we start to train ourselves to ask questions we wouldn't have otherwise asked.
And so I know we're talking about social change here, but what I love about this entire social change season is the questions that we ask, the concepts that we talk about, these are actually also what's required for successful organizational change. I want to make maybe a 10-degree shift.
Okay.
Talk about the Set Me Free project and the curriculum that you've just gotten approved for schools.
Awesome. Yes. So the Set Me Free project does prevention education on human trafficking, social media safety, and health and relationships. So we have curriculum with those topics in mind. Now they're all different in different grade levels, but from kindergarten through college age for you. So K through 12 for schools, and then college, and then adults of every facet of the community. What makes the curriculum so fabulous, in my never to be humble opinion here, what makes that so great is that it is engaging, it is fun, and it involves critical thinking. I think the problem with some of these concepts that we do with youth is we tell youth things like, don't do this. Don't do that. Stay off the screen. You've got to be careful with this. And they're going to reject that all day long. And so what we do with our curriculum is really make it so that it's fun. A lot of activities, a lot of engagement, humor. We put humor in there despite the topic, and really make it so that they are thinking through those processes. What does it mean to, you know, find relationships on social media? Is that healthy? Is it not healthy? What are the pros? What are the cons? And really get them to have those conversations so that they walk away learning what is the best strategy, the safest strategy, and how to really protect themselves from and their peers from things like human trafficking and sexual violence.
If I think about my own children, and I have young children, right? If I think about topics like sex trafficking and sexual abuse, these are topics that I know I want to educate my kids on, but I don't know how to have a conversation that's not really raw.
Right.
Misaligned with their understanding of that kind of trauma.
Yeah.
And so how, if you're going from kindergarten all the way to adulthood, how do you have those conversations with kids who aren't clued into, and perhaps shouldn't at this age, be clued into some of the more grisly details?
We have amazing educators on our team that really bring that developmentally appropriate age all over our curriculum. I think that you hit the topic right there, and I'm going to come back to something you just said. But in kindergarten through second grade, for example, well, actually kindergarten through sixth grade, we're not talking about sex trafficking. We're not talking about sexual violence. We're talking about things like we've got the social emotional learning going on. We're talking about things like empathy, responsibility, consent. What does it mean? What if somebody comes and gives you a big bear hug and you don't want one? You get to say no to that. What does that look like? We're talking about social media safety because I just saw a little baby, I mean, couldn't even talk, on a phone playing a game yesterday, you know. So those are the conversations that we're starting, and it's a journey with that age group. So they're learning consent at kindergarten, bodily autonomy. They get to say no to good touch or bad, you know, bad touch for sure, but also good touch. And then growing into that conversation, now you are developmentally ready to really understand the concepts of sexual violence, human trafficking, what this looks like. Now that changes from seventh grade through 12th grade, obviously, but those are how we have those conversations. But one of the things you said was grisly details. That is the most important thing to understand, because so many people, when they have this conversation about human trafficking specifically, the conversation turns to the grisly details. Those are not the things we need to talk about. It's not the grisly details. Yeah, those are the sensational, the things that draw us in. But what we need to know is, what are the myths of human trafficking? What are the realities of human trafficking? And what does the luring technique of the trafficker look like? And so I think sometimes we get caught up in all those other things and we miss the real important topics. So yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, it's almost like getting caught up in, I mean, the grisly details are somebody else's story.
Yeah.
As opposed to emphasizing sort of my story.
Correct.
My story is about what I need to do vis-a-vis the relationships that I'm encountering and will encounter in the future.
That's right. That's right. There are grisly stories out there. Absolutely. But those aren't the stories that, first of all, they're not necessarily our stories to tell. But those are also not the stories that make it relatable. And so if I'm a seventh grader on social media and somebody is talking to me about this horror that happened to someone else, I might have compassion. I might think, oh my gosh, that's horrible. But will I be able to relate it to my life? And that's the goal, is that there, we want every kiddo to see themselves in our curriculum and walk away knowing, okay, I'm at risk, but here's how I can utilize the tools to keep myself safe and my be an advocate for others.
I love that. And again, I just keep going back to it in an organizational transformation setting, thinking about the way we talk to people about what's happening or what's coming down the pike, thinking about the way we empower people to sort of live into a future state that is more positive and productive, whether we're talking about social change or change within the organization. It resonates for me in terms of the way we talk to people to drive change across the board.
Well, and here's something that I think I just recently spoke to a group of leaders on multi-generational conversations. And this was primarily a group of Gen Y and Gen Z with some Gen X thrown in there. And they were looking at their leaders who were mostly baby boomers and Gen Xers, but primarily baby boomers, and saying the change in this company as far as diversity, equity, and inclusion is not fast enough. And why aren't people recognizing the importance of Juneteenth? Why aren't people recognizing that if there is just a picture of white older men that are leaders, there's something lacking because you're missing diversity, and, you know, on and on. So the conversation that we were having with them is, let's look at the change that is occurring, because change is slow. If it's going to last, it has to be a little on the slower side. And that is really hard for people who want progression, people who want to see this change. But it is so important to understand that it's happening. It's not maybe happening at the pace we'd like to see it, but it is happening. And what can we do as a community, as individuals, to further that change every step that we take? It's hard to be patient and to watch a process that is not going as fast as we'd like it to.
And I think it can be hard if social issues are salient for you, mm-hmm. but you're not the victim of the social issue.
Correct.
To know what I can do, like, and what of the things that I can do are actually meaningful?
Yeah.
And which of these things are going to fall flat as sort of hollow and empty? I mean, I'm thinking specifically about some of like the Juneteenth coloring on ice cream, Juneteenth washing brands. Does this move the needle for anyone? Based on the feedback that I heard from some of my Black friends and colleagues, no, it doesn't. It's empty. And certainly none of these manufacturers said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make an empty gesture because that's what sells product.
Yeah.
How do we find genuine?
It's hard because one of the things I talk about is this idea behind diversity. We can't want diversity for the sake of diversity. We can't workshop it, right? It can't be like, okay, well, obviously we've got some issues here and we've got some lawsuits going on. So I'm going to hire this person. So check, I've got the diversity checkbox. That can't be the case. And unfortunately, that is the case in a lot of areas. And so that's where understanding what equity is and really getting companies to dive into that. It's not about diversity for diversity's sake. It's about making things equitable so that we can see everybody at the table. You know, if you look at some of the ads, there was an H&M had a very offensive ad that came out. And they were scathed for this ad. But what it says to me is not, wait, why didn't anybody recognize that this was offensive? What it says to me is there were not enough people that have diverse thoughts, that have diverse viewpoints, that have diverse cultures sitting at that table because nobody recognized it or nobody was able to say that is not okay. And so how do you make genuine happen? It's got to be a learned behavior. We've got to start with equity. We've got to teach it from a young age. It can't just be about tokenism. You know, we had a situation at our work and I'm the CEO and we had during Black History Month, somebody who wanted to do this great piece on Black History Month. And two of the Black employees, and we're a very small organization, so there were two of us, and we want to highlight you during Black History Month. Well, great. Why not highlight us any other month? Why are you only highlighting us during Black History Month? And who else are you going to highlight during this? And so I think we need to think beyond, what can I do to make sure that nobody calls me out? Because it's fill in the blank.
I think we also have to get comfortable with the idea that we don't know the answer.
That's right.
That part of fostering diversity and equity and inclusion on my team is acknowledging that I don't perhaps have the best ideas around celebrating the Black people or the Hispanic right. folks or the Asian folks that are on my team. But you know who does? They know what they would like in terms of recognition.
Correct.
And so creating, and also it's not appropriate to expect that every single Black person wants to be recognized in the same way, just like
that's right.
Not every white that's person right. wants to be recognized in the same way. It's not all humans want to be recognized in the same way. And so taking a moment to learn about each other.
As individuals. Yeah.
That's right. And recognize that diversity is something below what you can see.
And yes, thank you for saying that, because so often we get into this mindset that diversity is black and white, right? Literally, diversity is about color. Diversity is about a number of different things. And it can be race, it can be gender, it can be sexual identity, but it can also be socioeconomic status, it can be culture, it can be a number of different things that bring diversity to the table. And those voices are all important because any given company represents, hopefully, everybody. And I think that we really need to start thinking along the lines of who are we trying to reach? And when you're talking about a nonprofit, who's our community that we are trying to serve? There was a trafficking organization, counter-trafficking organization. It's a house serving individuals who were trafficked, survivors, and the majority of them were women of color. They had a strategic planning meeting and took a picture of their leadership at this strategic planning meeting. Not one person of color was represented in that meeting. So how do they speak to the women they're serving if there's not one person on their strategic planning meeting speaking to that population? You can't do it. It's impossible.
What do you do when you've screwed it up? I've screwed it up, right? Like, I've said the wrong thing and certainly wasn't intending to say the wrong thing, and then looked back and been like, oh, wow, that's fascinating. That those words are out there now.
That's a great question. And I would like all the politicians to listen to my answer. Apologize. I think it truly is as simple as acknowledging that you screwed it up, saying that you did, and what you're going to do to move forward in the future. It really is. I think if more people owned their mistakes, we would see such a different dynamic in the way we communicate. And we're going to screw up. We are going to make mistakes. We're not perfect. None of us are. We're human beings. We all have flaws. We all have things that we need to fix and we need to get better. That's okay. That's just who we are. And so when we screw up, acknowledge it as publicly as it happened. And I think that's the important piece. If you did something in front of a group of people, don't just apologize to that one person that you feel you offended. Apologize as publicly as the screw up was. And I think that's how you remedy those things.
I think that's great advice. I know we're coming to the end of our time here, but before we go, is there one more thing that you can recommend our listeners do to start moving the needle on the social issues that resonate with them?
We all have kind of this passion, this is what, it's righteous anger. This is what it is that I really feel like needs to be changed. And the first thing I think you should do is learn. That is the number one thing. I think a lot of times we get passionate about something. We want to see social change happen. We want to see the needle moving. And so we dive in before we really have an understanding of what it takes to change that needle. And so the first thing I always recommend people do is just get educated on that topic, learn, listen, and then start taking little steps to move that needle forward.
I love that. Well, thank you, Stephanie. I know I've learned a lot today, and I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thank you.
If viewers want to connect with you directly or learn more about the Set Me Free project and its mission, how should they go about doing that?
Absolutely. You can find us at setmefreeproject.net. That is the best way. And we're on all the socials, and you can email us, but all of that information is right there on the website.
Perfect. And I will be sure to include those links in the show notes. I really appreciate your time and perspective here. Hopefully our listeners can take your advice and apply it to the issues that matter to them. If any of our listeners would like to bring these kinds of conversations to their own organizations, you can visit us at blueswiftconsulting.com to schedule an intro call. Thanks again, Stephanie.
Thank you.